As I said before, people who come here and are sort of naive or sort of unfamiliar with meditation practice, for them it's most easy. For them it's much more easier to get into samatha or do investigation. Because they are not loaded up with all these ideas about all these different schools of Buddhism, about the teachings of the Lord Buddha, about all the commentaries of the Lord Buddha. They just do what is taught here. And when I say, if you do this kind of practice, and this will lead to samatha, or this will lead to samadhi, and if they just follow, then that's where they end up. Because they have no doubt, they have no other knowledge, so they are not perturbed by all these other existing methods or things that exist. And it's the same way. When I say this thing will lead to samatha, then it will lead to samatha. When I say this kind of method, investigation, will lead to wisdom, then it will lead to wisdom. And when I say these things will get rid of our fetters that bind us to the realms of rebirth, then this will lead. But for people who come from all these different schools, who have done meditation retreats with this person or that person, who read a lot of books about Buddhism, they will have it very difficult. Because the moment they start practicing and think about this or think about that, they think about the old methods that they have used and how successful they were, and so they're switching forth and back and forth and back. And the results might not even come, or the results will come very slowly. And that is because we are so loaded with knowledge, with concepts, with views about how practice should be, that we are not able to fall into the practice itself. And the same thing happened to me. I was doing practice in Europe for 6 years, in England and Germany. When I came here, I had to retrain myself. Completely forget about whatever I learned, whatever I heard. In order to be able to follow the practice of Thanaja Mahapo. His way of practice. And I had to trust. The moment I met this venerable, I had the trust in him. I had just the confidence that he knows. He knows the path to the deliverance. He knows the path to freedom. And so, then I decided, okay, forget whatever you know. Just drop it. All the methods, just drop it. And just do whatever he said. Do the Buddha, or do investigation of the body. But it took, and that's why I say, you know, it's difficult. It took me 2 years to get rid of all my views and opinions that I gathered up in the West. And it needed 2 years of brainwashing, actually brainwashing. All these strong ideas that came from the teachings in the West, I had to wash out. I had to wash away. So this was very difficult. It was a very difficult time. The practice didn't want to go because of all my remembrance of my old practice. But finally I succeeded. And it showed me that the teaching of Thanaja Mahapo is a teaching that leads to the results that he talks about. But you completely have to trust him. So I trusted him 100% when I came here. And now after 12 years I trust him. If there is this possibility, 1,000%. The confidence increased, increased, and increased. It never decreased. Because what he taught is that what you can follow, and the results he talks about is that what you will experience when you follow his practice. If, of course, you know, you adhere to your old practices and all your old views and opinions that you have brought from the various teachers, then you will not. You will not be able to make it. You will not be able to see the results that I talked about here in this monastery. And there are so many views and so many opinions that we gather, even if we don't know, that we gather of our past education in the practice of the Lord Buddha. When we went to different teachers, then this will stick or that will stick. When we went to that teacher, this will stick or that will stick. When we read the suttas, this will stick or that will stick. When we read the commentaries or when we read normal books, what he thinks about the Buddha's teaching or what that person thinks about the Buddha's teaching, this all will stick. And it's very difficult to get rid of. It is like then we come here and then it is like that we are heavily loaded to climb up the mountain. Our backpack is heavily loaded with stones of views and opinions. And you know it is very difficult, the more load we have in our backpack, the more difficult it is just to make one step forward. Because it tires us down. It draws us down. But I had this great teacher, or I still have this great teacher, who always, when I had in the beginning, when I had wrong views, as if he knew my thoughts, you know, he just said it openly in his next talk, that this was the wrong idea. When I thought this, an arahant should have sati all the time, then he just, 5 minutes later, or maybe a day later, he said, why should an arahant have always sati? Why should an arahant be always mindful? Mindfulness is something that gets us to the deliverance, and once we are delivered to freedom, then there is no need for this mindfulness anymore. Then there is no need for wisdom anymore. Because satipanya is that thing that brings us to freedom. Once we are at the freedom, why do we need to use the tools? We can use them, but we cannot use them. So, this is one of the many things. This about, an arahant cannot do this, an arahant cannot do this, an arahant should not behave like this. Whenever a thought like this crossed my mind, within a few days, the answer came from him, straight from him. No, this is not that. This is not the way. Why should not? There are 5 khandhas. The 5 khandhas belong to memory. For instance, an arahant should not dream. Dream is within the 5 khandhas. It has nothing to do with an arahant. And nothing to do with a liberated person. And so on, and so on. So that's why I warn you. You know, get rid of your old views. Get rid of the technique. And just do and just follow. For your own sake, you know. If you want to get in touch with the results I'm talking of, if you want to get in touch with the results Tanacha Mahabodhi is talking of, just forget. Whatever you knew, forget it. Whatever you practice, just forget it. Just follow it. When you want to do calm, as I said, you just concentrate on the Buddha, or you concentrate on the tip of the nose doing anapanasati, or you do the combination. And whatever thought, no matter what, you just do not buy into. When we do samatha, then we do samatha. And we do not start investigation. When we do investigation, we do investigation and do not switch to samatha. Not within the same time, not within one session. And one session can consist of many hours. So, before we start a session, we said, okay, now I'm doing investigation. for the next 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 hours. If you sit just for 2 hours and then walk for 2 hours and then sit 2 hours again, that is still one session. We do the same thing. The longer we keep concentrated on one thing, the more results we will get. There is one and only one exception for samatha, when we can actually do investigation. And that is when the pain becomes too strong. Then it is allowed for us to switch to investigation of this pain, to investigate what the pain is like, in order to transcend pain, in order to transcend, but before we can transcend, we have to understand pain, the nature of pain. What is pain? First we go into the body, to the location where the pain is, and then we investigate pain. Is it point-wise? Is it an area? Is it moving around? Or what is it? Is it the muscles? Is it the flesh that is in pain? How can the flesh be in pain? If the flesh is the pain, then I should be in pain all my life. If the muscles are pain, then what is pain? It's the same thing. What is the pain? We want to really know what is pain. Flesh cannot be pain, otherwise we would be painful. Rest of Allah. Muscles cannot be painful, because otherwise we would be rest of Allah painful. So what is pain? We really have to get down to what is pain. Understand it. Is it moving? Does it obey to the two laws of anicca, or anatta, or dukkha? Investigate it in line, or bring it down to the four elements. What is pain? You know, it's mostly fire element. Oh, there's some earth element in it. Well, then investigate it in these terms. There's some water element, or some air element. There's movement. The pain is not constant. If we understand pain, we can transcend pain. If you don't understand pain, if you just sit through pain, you know, then it's useless. We have to understand the true nature of the pain. What really is pain? The muscles are not pain. The flesh is not pain. The bones are not pain. Even if we feel it in that area, investigate it. What is pain? Really get down to know it. Only if we understand the true nature of pain, then we can transcend it. But it's not easy. We need all our mindfulness. The stronger the pain gets, the more mindfulness we need. We cannot allow the mind to get out for a second, or even for a mind moment. The moment we see that the mind goes out, then it will come back and we will be defeated. We cannot let the mind go away from the object. We cannot let the mind turn away from the object. Just one moment and it's gone. And then it comes back. I don't like pain, or the pain is too strong, or I'm going to break my leg, or I'm too... You know, my body will, you know, just scramble, or I will die, and things like that. And then we are defeated. We still have not understood the nature of pain. So this is the only exception for samatha. Now, when I say one session, then we say, you know, we're talking about at least 3 hours, or 4 hours, or 5 hours, or 6 hours, or even through the whole night. Then this is samatha. So we are only concerned with kaya. So we do the Buddha, or we do anapanasati, or we do the combination of Buddha with anapanasati. And the only exception is there when we investigate pain. And then when the session is finished, then we can switch. So if you did the whole day samatha, then we can switch for another session that may consist of an hour or 2 hours to investigation. And it's the same thing when we do mostly investigation. Then one session we take, okay, now we are doing. Before we sit down or before we're going to walk, we determine, okay, now for an hour, it's investigation or it's samatha. This is most important. Not to switch, not to muddle it up. To muddle up samatha and vipassana. To muddle up samadhi and investigation is not very helpful. We do not understand then in the end, if we muddle it up, if we never care, you know, whatever the mind wants to go, then let it go. We will never understand. We have to force the mind. We have to make the mind our tool. Or we have to make the citta our tool. To go here or to go there. To either investigate or to receive calm. We cannot allow the mind, you know, to be muddled up. Now, okay, now I feel tired, I do samatha. Okay, that's nice. Now I'm okay, now I'm refreshed, I do vipassana. That's not the way it should work. Now I do this, and then I do it. And for the next session, I just will do it. When I tell myself, okay, for the next week, investigation. Okay, then this will be only investigation, with the exception of 1 hour or 2 hours that we do samatha. And it's the same thing for samatha. When we do samatha, samatha means calm. When we do calm, then we tell ourselves, okay, for the next 2 weeks, I just will train myself in calm. And then I just do calm, with the exception of 1 investigation or reflection. 1 hour or 2 hours. Don't muddle these things up. The mind is already muddled up so much that we have to break this muddling up. We have to understand what is what. Samatha is samatha and not vipassana. Vipassana is vipassana and not samatha. Not just, you know, not just following the mind. If you follow the mind, that's, we have done it all our life long. And we should know that this will not lead to any solution. Just letting our mind, okay, now it's time for investigation. Oh, now I'm interested in this. Now I'm interested in that. This is not investigation. Investigation is the same object for the same session. This object, be it now an internal object of the body, or being the external object of the body, or just is it... It can be reflection about the bodies as a general topic, or it can be just putting the body into its bits and pieces, understanding the nature of the body, whatever we take up. This we should keep to. For this long time. When we do investigation, okay, one session, you know, is the internal body and one session is the external body, that is fine. But just make sure that you know what you're doing before you start your session. And the longer the session, the more fruit it will bring. We want to get the mind clear. This is this, and this is that. An investigation, we have to do it. When we investigate the liver, we don't want to investigate the... What is thigh? Don't remember the English term. We don't want to investigate the lungs. So, when we just investigate the liver, until we see it clearly in front of our eyes, until we see the nature in front of our eyes. So, investigation, if you do it correctly, if you understand it correctly, it's also the synonym for wisdom. Wisdom only develops when we do investigation. Investigation or reflection or whatever. reflection about the body in general. You know, whatever goes into the body is nice and whatever comes out of this body is disgusting. Why is it so? Let's open up the body to see, you know, what is its true nature. Where comes all this dirt from? Where comes all this smell from? Where comes all this shit from? The food just rots away in our stomach. There we don't mind it. But if you see rotting food out there, you know, we find a disgusting smell. Isn't that strange? You know, the moment it is in our body, we don't mind. But the moment it comes out from our body, we do mind. We do find it disgusting. More or less disgusting, it doesn't matter. It's unpleasant. It can be all forms of unpleasant. It can be a little unpleasant, it can be strongly unpleasant, and can be disgusting, it can be loathsome, you know, it can bring up our hate. Doesn't matter what reaction it is. So how can this be? This is reflection. Reflection about the body. Another reflection about the body is, you know, what to make a calculation. How much time do we have to care about this body? And how much does it bring? Cost effect. How much pleasure does it bring? So why really to take so much care of this body? How much pleasure does it bring? And just reflect about how much pleasure it brings. And you will see it's a very little amount. 24 hours, maybe you have 5 minutes of pleasure. Most of the time, you know, we are either hungry, or we are thirsty, or we are this, or we are that. We are tired, or we are exhausted, or... Huh? So why do we keep this alive? Why do we keep this body alive? This is a reflection. What does it really bring us? We have to work, you know, when we are in the world. We have to work so hard, you know, to clothing the body, to giving it medicine, to feeding the body, and to put it asleep, and to find it a house, you know, where it, or apartment, you know, where it can stay safe. So all our life we do something for this body, and then in the end it will die under our own hands. However much care we put into this body, it will die away. It will rot away, just the same way the food rots in our stomachs. It just rots away and then changes into energy. And that's why we eat it. Get it straight. We do not eat... Normally we do eat because of the pleasure of taste. But the purpose of eating is giving some strength to the body. We forget completely about it. We just eat what our eyes like or what our tongue likes. And then we get sick because we eat too much. And then we take some medicine to get rid of the pain from overeating or from eating this kind of food too much. Isn't it a little bit ridiculous? Think about, you know, when you think about these things, think in a straight way. Don't think in a crooked way. Learn to think straight. Crooked is, you know, the views of the world. Okay, this tastes nice, huh? This tastes nice. And this is beautiful. And this is beautiful. We don't think in a straight way. We think about what this body needs. What does this body need? It needs food, you know, that can be converted into energy. That's it. Point. Nothing else. It doesn't need, you know, who needs these things? Who needs the sweet taste? Who needs that thing, you know, the sour taste? Who? Our tongue. Our tongue doesn't care about the taste. Huh? It just gives us the impression of the taste. So who cares about it? Huh? Think about it. The citta. The chitta wants this feeling of sweet or feeling of sour, or the combination of sweet and sour, or the combination of this or that. The chitta wants to have the food nicely arranged, not like mixed up in the bowl, like the monks have. Let us mix all the things in one bowl. The rice
also needs a certain taste.
Huh?
Not only the chitta needs a taste.
Please, you know, no, Bruno. You can ask questions later. Don't interrupt me. I'm really, you know, if you ask question in between, that's the end of the talk. When I say, you know, now for this I stop, you know, then you can ask questions. But before that, don't. Please do not interrupt. So, look at it. Huh? Look at it yourself. Huh? The tongue tastes. So, the eye sees. But who likes this seeing? Who likes this taste? It's a chitta. And that's it, you know, that's the whole purpose of this body. The six senses. Seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, touching, thinking. That's why we keep up this monstrum of body. But it really doesn't matter, you know. So when we come to this monastery and the food is simple. Well, sometimes it's actually very pleasant. When I normally go to other monasteries, the food is really simple. It sometimes consists only of white rice, that's it. White rice and water. Well, it does its job. I'm not hungry anymore. It gives the body energy. And that's all what it needs. But we go for the taste. Just observe yourself, you know, when you sit in front of the food. See the greed coming in. I want this, you know, this is healthy for me, this is healthy for me. This is a... What is it? Why do you know? How do you know it's healthy for you? Look what your body is doing with it. But the moment it is in the stomach, you don't care anymore. Only if it's problematic, if it causes you some acid, or this, or that. But then you don't think about the food you've taken. You only think about the medicine that you need to heal it, to get relief of the pain. That's the way we act. So there's certainly some need for reflection upon this. And don't think this kind of reflection is done within a week. I remember battling just with the food and with the senses of taste for years on end. Sometimes thinking, okay, now it's fine. And then seeing myself actually grabbing these things again. And I thought, oh, well, I'm not finished yet. Battling with the senses of taste is so important. Battling with the senses of hearing is so important. Battling with the senses of seeing is so important. Or touching. Or thinking. These are the senses. These are the six senses that come with this body. And that's why we keep this body. That's why we take all the care of this body. To keep the senses. But now think about the senses will work and they will still work. If you take little care of this body, the senses will still work. The senses come with the body. So, think about very carefully what you do. Just follow what I say. This leads to calm, will lead to calm. this will lead to wisdom, then this will lead to wisdom. Investigation of the body, or reflection about the body, or reflection about our life, will lead to wisdom, if it's done properly. Reflection about the feeling, understanding the nature of pain, will transcend pain. When you do it correctly, then you will see the results. There's no doubt. If you doubt it in front, this method will lead to this or that, then you are without help. If I say this will lead to Sotapanna, or this will lead to Sakadagami, Anagami, or Arahant, then this will lead to cutting down the fetters. And I explained it quite often. The three fetters. Doubt is the first fetter that keeps most of us, especially from the West, from entering Sotapanna. Doubt. Doubt that there is heaven. Doubt that there is hell. Doubt that there is karma. Doubt that we produce karma all the time with our thinking, with our speech, with our action. And that's what we experience every moment, is the results of our karma. We doubt them. So we will not get beyond. Or we think, once we die, everything is over. This is a wrong view. So also a sort of doubt. Doubt is the first fetter. Doubt is what keeps most of the millions or billions of people from even starting the practice. Doubt that there is something like that. Doubt that there is karma, doubt that there is heaven, or doubt that there is hell. Why? Why to practice? Keeps most of us. Or keeps most of the people from practicing, from even starting the practice. Remember, we should remember, karma is the thing, is the one law that governs this whole universe. Whatever we receive now, whatever we experience right now in this very moment, is the result of our previous actions or thoughts or speech. It's not the fault of anybody else. It's our own making. Remember this well and you will fare well. Just accept and try to find the cause for this kind of karma within yourself, not within other people. Once you find the cause, get rid of the cause. If it unholds some karma, get rid of it. If it is wholesome karma, make more of it. So you have to find some trust. You have to find some confidence in the teaching of the Lord Buddha to make the way. And doubt is the one that hinders most of us. The more we read, the more we know, the less we are able to practice properly. Even the Lord Buddha warned his bhikkhus, the Dhamma can be a snake. If you grab the snake at the tail, it will come and bite you. It will poison you for the rest of your life. That means if you just take up Dhamma by studying Dhamma, then in the end, it will poison you. Poison us in the way that we already know everything. And we don't need to practice. But you know, knowledge goes. Knowledge passes by, the moment our memory fades, this knowledge is gone. Not so with our experience, not so with our practice. Once we practice this, once we got this result, once we got this insight, this will stay for the rest of our lives. It's not burned in the memories, but it's burned within our citta. That's the difference between knowledge and wisdom. Wisdom is burned within our citta. It makes a hole, or it removes a stain, and this stain is removed forever. If you memorize something, then this is just memory, and it will fail to appear within a few years, or even in the next life you don't remember anything. If you attain to Sotapanna in this life, we might not remember it, but the things is still there. We know there are certain things we know. Where they come from, we cannot imagine. So when we are born here as a Sotapanna in this life, there are certain things that we just won't do, because of our wisdom we have gathered in the last life. We will not break any of the five precepts. Not at all. There is not the slightest wish, there is not the slightest intention to break any of the five precepts. A Sotapanna is a perfect person who keeps the five precepts perfectly. This is something he won't do if he remembers it or not. He remembers there is something, you know, that is, there is something beyond. So he will always seek Dhamma. There is no doubt in Dhamma with him, because the first fetter of doubt has been erased. And the second fetter, you can imagine now when I say he's a perfect person who keeps the sila, or keeps the precept, that's the second fetter. Sila bhata paramasa, fiddling with the precept. Keeping them or not keeping them, keeping them again and not keeping them, keeping them again and not keeping them again. That is the second fetter. So, once we decided we want to keep them, just keep them for the rest of our life. Don't even get the slightest intention to go against the precept. If we have enough mindfulness, we can keep the precepts to the rest of our life. And it prevents us, even if we don't get into Sotapanna, it prevents us from going down to the hell realm. It's our passport for the human realm or for the upper realms. So that is the second fetter. The third fetter is the identification with the body. The citta in the body is one. That's what we think. So the third fetter is breaking this concept. And I told you, no, there's one exercise how we can break this concept. Putting the body in front of us, disassembling the body in front of us, until the knowledge arises that for a moment when all the parts of the body are out, there is no body anymore and there is no I. And we have to train this until this knowledge will gather in our heart. We'll gather in the citta until the citta understands that the citta and the body are two different things. That's the third fetter. And once we reduced all these three fetters to the minimum, then we just need a quiet moment where all things can come together. And that is the end of our worldlingship. And it's our start of Sotapannaship. For the first time we see Nibbana. For the first time in our life we see Nibbana. And that, even if it's just one mind moment. It's in the flesh. It can be just a flesh. It will have an effect that will change our whole life. And what happens then after? It's called the Magga. Just this flesh moment of Nibbana. It's called the Magga. And what happens then after? A lot of wisdom arises. Just by seeing this, you know, just imagine, you know, just seeing the Nibbana for the first time. Just within the flesh. And it will take, it will ponder. We don't understand what we have seen. But this seeing, or this insight, this deep insight, it may change our ways. We will understand Dhamma in a completely different way. We understand, then we start to understand, okay, this is rightful Dhamma and this is not rightful Dhamma. This is things that lead to Dhamma and these are things that do not lead to Dhamma. We do not understand them very clearly, but we understand them on a much better term than the worldling. than the one who has not got rid of his three fetters. The second stage is the stage of Sakadaka. Little can be said about this. It's said in the suttas that 50% of greed and hate are reduced. So the work of the Sotapanna, the work of the Sakadaka, is getting rid of greed and hate. And getting rid of greed and hate is the work of investigation of this body. Investigation of this body inside outside. Understanding its true nature and living with the feelings of unpleasant and pleasant. Understanding the true natures of unpleasant and pleasant. That means we actually have to stay with unpleasant feelings. See them arising, see them ceasing. We have to stay with unpleasant feelings, see them arising, see them ceasing. This kind of work, just accept that this is bringing unpleasant feelings and pleasant feelings, or unpleasant images and pleasant images, to a balance. To a balance. Now think about all your life you were running after the pleasant thing. Just imagine how unbalanced your scale is. All the unpleasant things that you have evaded, you have run away from. Now, in this process, you have to bring up. This is the work of the Sotapanna. This is the work of the Sakadagami. To bring them up, to make the balance, to make the scale balanced. You can do it, and that is normally taught here in this monastery, just to bring up all these unpleasant things. Until the moment you cannot even see for days, or maybe for weeks, pleasant things. Until you hit the other side of the scale. And then you start bringing the scale down and investigating the pleasant. Until the scale is evenly balanced. When the scale of pleasant things and unpleasant things is evenly balanced, then you just walk through the center of pleasant and unpleasant. And that is the end of greed and hate. Gone. Never come back. And as a result, you are anagami. You are not one that ever comes back into these realms of beings. At least, when you die at this stage, you will be born into the five highest heavens. They are just reserved for anagamis. There are five realms for anagamis, depending on the fetters they have gotten rid of. So if an anagami has not got rid of the higher fetters, the higher fetters of rupachana or arupachana, or what is it? Ditti, conceit, restlessness, avicca. These are all different realms. And he goes from one realm to the other. And it mostly takes him 50,000 years to cross to Arahantya. So he is the only person who is really doomed. He is doomed for the good. He is doomed to go within, at most, 50,000 years, to go to Arahantya. If he has gotten rid of the higher fetters, the first higher fetter, then it takes him 40,000 years. If he has gotten rid of the next fetter, the next fetter, the next fetter, it takes him less and less and less. He is the only person who will fall up. But it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work of investigation. And because we don't like unpleasant things, that is the first thing that we have to investigate. If we really want to bring the scale into balance, then we have to do it. There's no way that we can achieve. We have to get these things balanced. If you don't get these things balanced, there is no way to walk through the center of it. And we have to walk through the center of it. To get there. There's just no way. If we always avoid the unpleasant things, there's just no way that we make it. That's why it's nearly impossible for lay people to get to this stage. The Lord Buddha said it's nearly impossible for a lay person to get to this stage. Because as long as he lives in the world, you know, he can do what he likes, he will not be able to make it. It's impossible for a lay person to get an arahant. Well, Lord Buddha states it like this. So you have to live like an ascetic. Or you have to live, you know, it's the same word, a samana or an ascetic or a monk, a Buddhist monk, in order to get to these realms. But Sotapanna, you know, it's quite interesting. Even for lay people. Because what? Why? It assures us that we never ever fall into hell. This is one assurance, this is one knowledge that suddenly pops up. If you have gone to Sotapannaship, this pops up. You don't know where this knowledge is coming from, but you know you're safe. You will never ever fall down into the lower realms. Not only in the hell realms, but even in the ghost realms, animal realms, or demon realms. You just know it. You just somebody inside, you know, knows it. You will never ever go there. And you know that you are on the way. But that doesn't mean that you cannot have family. You can have a wife or you can have a husband. You can have kids. You still are full of greed and hate. You haven't even reduced greed and hate yet. They're still full working, in full working condition. So, that's why you still can have a wife or why you still can have a husband or kids or things like that. But you are one person, you know, who keeps the silas. He doesn't have to take the precepts. He just keeps them. Even if he doesn't know what the precepts are, he keeps them. He is perfect in keeping the precepts, the five precepts. The five precepts have nothing to do, you know, with greed and hate. He still can go and watch shows, you know. He goes and travels from this country to that country. Even might want to go to the moon or to the Mars or, you know, in another planetary system. He might be interested in science or in art, you know, whatever. He's not reduced in any way. He's only, you know, he only has the security of not falling down. And within seven lifetimes, that's a promise, he will make it to arahantship, to complete liberation. So. But if one thinks about it, so that looks nice, you know, that sounds pretty perfect. But if one looks from another point of view, from the point of view of dukkha, he has still a lot of dukkha. The Sotapanna has all the dukkha, you know, just like you, maybe a little bit less. So he's not free of dukkha. Of course he cannot be free of dukkha. The only person who is free of dukkha is the arahant. Now think about it, the difference between an anagami and a Sotapanna. An anagami is full of delusion. Because he has greed and hate in full combat. In full working conditions. And anagami has gotten rid of it. He has gotten rid of greed and hate that produce so much dukkha. But he still has dukkha. So compared to an arahant, he's nothing. He's still a piece of trash. But of course in his stage he cannot see the dukkha. But he knows, you know, from the comparison to Sotapanna, There's no dukkha, you know. He still has dukkha. But this dukkha is so slight, you know, it's like, you know, somebody tips on your head. And when in comparison to an elephant stamps on your head, you really notice the difference. And with the Arahant, there is no dukkha anymore. There are no kilesas, nobody tricks him anymore. But the five khandhas, in all cases, the five khandhas are still there. And what are the five khandhas? Please remember now. It's the body, and all the bodily functions. It's feeling, neutral feeling, pleasant feelings, unpleasant feelings. It's still there. Memory is still there. Associations are still there. Thought is still there, and consciousness is still there. He's liberated in his citta. That means the kilesas are not there anymore who take charge of the khandhas. So whatever he does has no karma. Whatever he thinks, if he's mindless, then normally in our case, the kilesas, the moment we get mindless, the kilesas take charge of. And we produce karma. The moment we are mindful, the kilesas cannot take charge. But for an arahant, it's not like that. If he's mindless or mindful, it doesn't change anything. So I want you to take this to heart and remember it and follow the practice and you will receive this result. Inevitable. You know how to undermine the fetters. It's explained. You know how to gain wisdom. It's explained. You know how to gain calm or samadhi. It's explained. Now use these things wisely. Use these things skillfully to make the way, to find your own safe haven that you ever dreamed of. And it's up to you to what level you come. If you want to reach this life to Sotapanna, then this is not out of your abilities. You can. For some people it's more difficult, for some people it's easier. If you really want to do something, you can do it, you know. You have learned to walk even through all this pain of walking. You have learned to talk even through all this pain of talking. You have learned to think. And now you think about how long it took. How long it took to train this mind. And now we have to untrain it. Train it for a different purpose. And that's of course. Not training for the purpose of gaining knowledge, but training for the purpose of gaining insight. It's completely the opposite. Knowledge will never ever release us. Otherwise, if it could release us, if it could lead us to deliverance, to freedom, what's the use of sitting through all this pain? Just read a few books, and we all deliver. The more we read, the more confused we get. The more we try different kinds of practice or different kinds of styles or go into different schools of meditation or Buddhism, the more we get confused. And the more difficult it is to get out of this confusion. Don't take confusion lightly. Get rid of your knowledge and just do the practice and you will get there in no time. And with this I end the talk. Now if you have questions you can ask.